through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
What started as a joke has turned into an absolute disaster.
No!
I was just joking around last night on Twitter, guys. I promise you. I was kind of serious, though. There was a little bit of sincerity in there. I tweeted out last night. Let's see here. Bullpens are fluid and unpredictable year to year. If Jerry DePoto's can perform respectively, there's no reason why the Mariners can't finish at or near 500. We expect an improvement on 68 wins last year anyway, right? 10 more wins gets you at least near 500. Now, when I said that, I was just trying to, you know, express some Mariner positivity, get people going. Like, yeah, Tom, you're right. Maybe they could. I don't know. And then I just got hit with, you're nuts. You're out of your mind. They're going to win less than 68 games. It's going to be a disaster. There's no reason to watch, etc. So, if you guys wouldn't mind, would you guys mind if I tried to explain the difference between hope versus expectation?
Go for it.
Okay. Hope is that Evan White, Shed Long, J.P. Crawford, Jake Fraley, Kyle Lewis all show development. Hope is that Phillips Valdez, Nestor Cortez actually turn into somebody. Hope is that because last year's bullpen was such a disaster, maybe we'll luck into a half-decent bullpen this year. Hope is that if all or some of those things come together, we might arrive at, I don't know, 78 wins or so. That's hope.
That
expectation, real quick.
Yeah.
Expectation is that Kyle Lewis hits 36 home runs, Evan White becomes a gold glover at first base all in year one. Jake Fraley and Braden Bishop, Fraley specifically, takes Haniger's job in right field. Tom Murphy turns into Johnny Bench. That's expectation. That's not going to happen. I don't have that. I don't have that kind of expectation at all. But I can have hope, can't I?
Well, of course you can have hope. And I think for every fan that's out there, Mariners fans, I think have entered into this deep, dark place for quite some time, but you look at it and say, okay, anytime that hope is expressed with the Mariners, it is quickly received with derision in terms of, oh, it's the Mariners, they haven't been able to make the playoffs in however many years, all the bad decisions, all of the, you know, false promises of future superstars and guys like that that never ended up panning out into, you know, long-tenured type of players. I think with what you're saying for this particular season in this rebuilding process is, look, hopefully you're entering a year where you've got a bunch of young talent that you're trying to figure out if they're going to stick around or not. And there is that potential that some of these guys can fit the bill. Not that they are superstars, not that they are, you know, turntable, turnkey right away going to be, you know, big time players in the league, but that they show promise and that they continue to keep getting better. Guys like J.P. Crawford, guys like Evan White, you know.
J.P. Crawford, just to, while you mentioned him, he's going to be in year five.
Yeah.
Right? So there's expectation on him.
There is starting to become more expectation, but he is part of that young group of players that you're hoping, you know, come start playing better. And Kyle Lewis is another guy that I would throw in there. So there's this interesting point where, as you've said, the bullpen, it is really one of those things that you just never know what you're going to get from year to year. And if you can have a half decent bullpen, it could be a possibility. So I know people are automatically going to say, well, wins and losses don't matter, and I understand that. That's not necessarily the goal or expectation of the season, but it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to have this team and these young players perform better than last year as they went through the year.
Yeah, I'd never knock anyone for hoping that they get to the playoffs. You know what I mean? For hoping that you just have more wins than you were expecting. I mean, that's fine. Like, yeah, you're a fan. You should go into a season feeling whatever way you want to feel. I think if you're maybe combining expectations with hope, then getting to the playoffs feels like something that maybe you aren't necessarily hoping for. And instead, what you're hoping for is, you know, when I think of, you know, this season, hope to other people might be, I hope there's a star. I hope that in this batch of people they have, there's a star, or stars, plural. But if there's a star this year, when's the last time you've had a star?
Felix.
Really? Yeah, exactly. Which, when he first came to the organization,
yeah.
What, I mean, half the people listening were maybe still in high school or younger. So
maybe not even alive.
Yeah.
Our demo tends to skew young.
So I think hope doesn't have to mean I hope they get to the playoffs. Hope could be, you know what? If this is supposed to be a rebuilding year, then I really hope you've hit on some of these guys. And not just hit on them and they're going to be, you know, players that are going to help boost you and maybe be like a couple wins above replacement or like a serviceable guy. I hope you found someone that other teams want.
Yeah, I mean, if they were to win, they won 68 games last year. If they were to win 75 this year, would that mark a really significant improvement? Well, like you guys are saying, it depends how it happens. Maybe they have found a star somewhere in there, right? Maybe Kyle Lewis turns into a perennial all-star. Maybe it's a pitcher. Who knows how they get there? But, you know, I mean, do you guys want to go around? I made a little diagram here that I tweeted out. Do you guys want to go around the Mariner roster, the starters, and just label each one with either hope or expectation
around
real
the
quick?
Diamond.
You want to do that?
Sure. Okay.
Sure, we could do that quick.
Tom Murphy, who we interviewed 2 weeks ago.
I would say there's more expectation for
expectation
me.
Expectation on Tom Murphy? What do you think, Stacey?
I think expectation. Okay. I think that he has had enough time with the organization that you're kind of expecting him to contribute.
But not a huge expectation on him. Just but there is a standard.
And especially when you moved on from Omar Narvaez, right?
Right.
Like they decided to go with Tom Murphy, and so to me there's some expectation there when you move away from a catcher who was able to hit the ball extremely well like Omar Narvaez.
Let's go to designated hitter. Daniel Vogelbach.
Expectation.
Definitely expectation on him. He's been around long enough. He's talked about as a leader in that clubhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. And I did not love the way that he tailed off in the second half of the season.
You didn't
season.
Like his 162 batting?
I wasn't a big fan of that.
I thought you loved that, Jake.
I wasn't really a big fan of that. It was fun. It was a nice run for Vogie at the beginning of the year, and then he just never turned it around or figured it out. So I want to see if Vogelbach is for real. And I don't want to hear how everybody loves Vogelbach when he's hitting 167. Get out of here with that.
All right. First base, Evan White, the newly wealthy Evan White.
Yes. I think there's expectations. You could say hope.
Year one?
You could say hope. I have expectations for Evan White. Anytime that you deem a guy that's worth getting that type of contract,
yeah.
And again, it's not an astronomical deal. It's a smart move by the Mariners. They're hedging their bets in this situation. But you are saying Evan White is hopefully your first baseman of the future. And I want him to show that. I have expectations that he is that guy that we can count on him being a part of the future. So I don't have any hope. I have expectations to see results from Evan White.
I think once you've invested in someone, the expectation is that they will meet those demands.
Eventually, but not right out of the gate.
But you paid him right out of the gate.
Right.
Yeah, but that's fine, but they paid him ahead of time.
Right, but if we want to talk about what are the expectations, to me that's different. I don't expect Evan White to be an all-star year one,
okay.
But I'm saying that he is a promising player that we can look at Evan White this year and say, yes, he is going to be the first baseman of the Mariners without question. I like this guy. He's going to produce.
All right, so we got three expectations so far. Wow. All right, Shed Long. I'm omitting D. Gordon from this. Shed Long at second base. He played about 40 games last year or so, so this will be basically a continuation of year one for him.
I think hope.
Yeah.
You're still hoping to see some development and see where he goes. You've also not invested the same way as you might have with, you know, Evan White or, you know, an ace that you tried to get.
Yeah,
so
you hope that he's a major leaguer.
Yeah. Yeah.
J.P. Crawford is expectation for me.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
Going into year five, I mean, he's supposed to be.
I think one of the bigger expectations, maybe,
yeah,
for me.
I mean, just based on experience alone, I think he gets an expectation. Kyle Seager.
Expectation.
You know what? Oddly, he's a hope guy for me. I hope that he returns to the Kyle Seager of like 5 years ago.
Well, shoot, even the Kyle Seager that finished out the year last year. I mean, he was tearing the cover off the ball.
Stacey, you're right when you say expectation. Like, I expect that he'll at least meet some standard, but I hope that he'll get back to, like Jake said, what he was at the end of the year. Kyle Lewis, he's a hope guy for me. I think he will be a great Major League Baseball player, but you mentioned finding a star, Stacey. I think he's their star. I hope he turns into their star.
And that would be awesome because, yeah, obviously, you know, with this team, we talk about this, the two potential stars that we always bring up in the farm system is Jared Kelenic and Julio Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. And if Kyle Lewis can, you know, show that he can be a star, now you're adding that star, you know, level talent to your potential roster in the next year, in the next, you know, season in 2020 and 2021.
All right, I'm going to skip over center field because it's Malik Smith and Braden Bishop, and part of the reason why they're there is because of Mitch Haniger being out. I do want to talk about Jake Fraley, though. There's something about this guy, and I know putting him in right field to start the year, he's definitely not an expectation guy because he's so young, but this guy's got some kind of quality, a je ne sais quoi, as they say. Did I pronounce that okay?
A certain je ne sais quoi.
Je ne sais quoi. He's got that. So I'm going to put hope on him, but for the distant future, not really for 2020.
Okay.
Anybody else?
All right. Yeah, I'm probably right there in the same mark as you.
All right.
Yeah.
And we don't have to run through the pitchers right now. But there's a lot of hope. There's some expectation, but certainly not that they're going to make any kind of playoff run. But can they win more than 68 games if they have a bullpen, for God's sakes? Yes. I have three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
Kyle and I were talking about guys like Joey Hunt, George Fant, Ethan Posick, this morning, Tedrick Thompson. How much of the NFL offseason is just determining how much you can get away with?
What do you mean in terms of guys you can sign or add or?
Well, no, I mean, you don't necessarily want Joey Hunt to be your center. You don't want to end up with George Fant.
But if cutting Justin Britt saves you multi-million dollars,
oh, right,
maybe Ethan, you'd be like, we could get away with Hunt.
Right, do you want him to be your left guard? Getting away with a lot there.
I think that every team's dream roster is probably what the Seahawks had in 2013, where you have a bunch of really talented guys and, like, maybe one or two of them were really, really high draft picks. The other ones were guys that were third round, fifth round, some of them undrafted guys, and they were all on rookie deals. And I think that teams just constantly try to get close to that. So you're going to make mistakes when you're trying to toe the line and you're trying to get as close as you can to the greatest talent you have with the least cost. I was interviewing KJ Wright in the middle of the 2019 season, just about turning 30, and that kind of change in his life that was happening. And one thing he said was he was talking to a GM about how guys search for talent and that the need for teams, the pressure that teams feel is to always get younger and cheaper, always, always, always. And sometimes that comes at the expense of not just veteran leadership, but sometimes really good players that are maybe 28, 29, 30.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And for the Seahawks, they're going to have to make a couple key decisions here. Like you pointed out, Justin Britt is going to be a huge decision for the Seahawks and could have huge implications for them. So I look at a couple different positions that they could potentially get away with some spots. I think offensive line, maybe one or two guys on the offensive line, you can try and go cheap and go young and see what you can get out of those guys. Defensive tackle is absolutely another position that you could try and do that more so cheap and older. So there are definitely positions that they'll go out and try and, you know, skim by and see what they can get away with. But, you know, with this year and the expectations that they have, there's not a whole lot of positions that they can get away with it.
Next.
Number two.
We talked about Major League Baseball's proposed playoff expansion yesterday, which sounded kind of odd, maybe even ridiculous to me. Would you want that proposal in any other sport?
No, I wouldn't want any team to have the ability to pick, like back in this schoolyard and recess. Hey, I want to play you. I want to pick you. You know, that to me just seems absolutely childish. Like, that doesn't even make any sense in professional sports. It should be the top seed plays the lower seed, and it gets sorted out by that. I don't know why they would even entertain that thought or think that would be a good idea, that the nation would just be captivated by that potential drama. I just think it's silly.
It's gimmicky. I don't like it. I don't want to see that in any sport. I am fine with most of the playoff structures exactly the way they are. Honestly.
I am too. I mean, even the one in baseball.
Yeah, I don't like this proposal at all, and I feel like it's yet another thing of, you know, like limiting mound visits or doing whatever they want to do to try to make it to where it'll somehow become more interesting, and instead of fixing things that might actually affect people's interest, it's just doing the most, and there will be no... I have a hard time believing that this would really draw up a ton of new interest.
And Tom, yesterday when we talked about this, you said pop, right? Like,
yeah.
They try to pop the market.
Hot
shot it. That's the word. This is not going to hot shot anything.
No.
No one's going to care. So I just don't understand how they could be so off on an idea like this. It truly amazes me, and it concerns me about baseball in general, and are they going to be able to really turn things around? They've been trying to do it for a while, and it hasn't quite clicked for it.
Well, the fact that they would even entertain an idea like this tells me that they think baseball's issues are worse than they actually are. I didn't think that baseball's issues, like with the playoffs, were that bad. I mean, last year's playoffs were terrific. We came in here every day talking about them, and now
they're jumping the shark.
Yeah, they want to mess around with that. Like, mess around with the regular season. Don't mess around with the playoffs.
Yeah.
Especially in just a lame way.
Goodness.
I hate it. I hate it.
I hate you. Next.
Number three.
What's the ceiling for the XFL's popularity here in Seattle? Do you think it's closer to the Sounders or closer to the Storm?
I think it's closer to the Sounders. Now, that is huge. Like, you have to understand, comparing it to the Sounders is saying that they're going to fill out CenturyLink Field. So that's a huge thing to say, but I think it's much closer to the Sounders than it is the Storm. The Storm, they get, they get great fan base. They get people interested in the WNBA and in their team in particular because they've been so successful. But I really think that the fact that you're getting week one, you're getting around 30,000 people out to the Dragons game. Maybe it's just a new thing and people are interested and, the novelty will wear off. But I think there's a tremendous chance for the Seattle Dragons to really captivate an audience here. And if they are able to be sustainable in year two, year three, and you start to, get connected with the players that are actually on the roster and the talent gets better, I think it's got that potential.
I think that checks out. I think it also, whether or not they get to that next level, I think depends on whether they can accrue more stars. Are there Seahawks that people are going to fall in love with that end up not working with the roster but going to the XFL? I think it's going to take players that people recognize. And there are a couple there. Kaysen Williams, Keenan Reynolds, Isaiah Battle, even to name a few former Seahawks. But, I think that it's just going to need to take some more recognizable names.
What about DeMaurier Stringfellow? That's a name.
It is.
Jazz Ferguson?
Jazz Ferguson's supposed to be a star in this league. Follow-up question to the baseball thing. Because I mentioned yesterday, if it were up to me, I would shorten the season to like maybe 80 to 100 games. What if instead of doing that, and I've told this to Bob Stelton and we've argued over this for years, what if instead of doing that, we just shorten the games to 7 innings?
To 7 innings?
How do you feel about that?
Here's the reason why I don't like it. I understand shorting it to seven innings would obviously make the time shorter in terms of watching, obviously. But I just feel like nine innings has just been such a tradition in baseball. Like, you go from Little League where you play six innings, and eventually you start graduating to seven, then you get to nine. Like, there's just something about that from a traditional standpoint that I think would be unfortunate to lose. But I am 100% on board with you, Tom, about the amount of games. I think, you know, playing 162 games has been ridiculous for a long time, and I think shortening it to 80 to 100 games would be perfect. I think that would be the right remedy in this situation.
I think I'm fine with nine innings. I think just making it to where the games matter more. I think the problem is that people want to feel like, okay, I invested 3 or 4 hours. You know, like, if you're an everyday fan, you go to work, you come home, you catch a game, and you want to feel like it mattered instead of feeling like, all right. And that doesn't mean shortening the season drastically, but I'd be okay with it being a little shorter. I also wonder, it's weird to see their efforts to capture a younger audience. And someone actually texted this in, and I agree with them. It's weird to see the league's efforts to capture a younger audience don't include way more streaming option. Like, wouldn't that make more sense, trying to find a way to make it really accessible to cord cutters?
Do you mean streaming the games? Because they have tried streaming some of them on Facebook in the past couple of years.
They have, and that could be something too. It could be I think Thursday night football did like Amazon Prime stuff. I mean, I think that there's just making the games readily available to watch almost anywhere.
Don't those kids' parents have cable?
You can use their login.
Or can't they just turn on the TV?
No.
They can't?
No.
Kids don't know how to do that anymore?
I don't have cable.
Well, yeah. I mean, like...
But you don't live with your parents.
No. I don't think I'm alone. I just use a ton of streaming services.
Okay.
And a smart TV.
So how do you watch games?
Any way I want.
No, I... Okay. Name one of them.
There are... Here's the thing, and that's
ESPN app.
The funny part about it is there are some apps that are you can stream and you don't need to have a TV provider, but most of the apps you have to have a TV provider.
That's true, you do.
Right? So they make this as difficult as possible, you know, for a full-fledged transition, but you know, I'm the same way. We don't have cable. We have smart TV, but we do use and borrow login from somebody else.
See, Jake just went out and said it, and I didn't. I was very careful to make it.
I see.
Yeah.
See, I'm just dumb enough where I didn't really understand.
No,
what
the trick
going.
Is that maybe you have kind of a barter system with friends. Hey, I've got Hulu.
I see.
You've got
a little quid pro quo.
Yeah,
that's right.
Like, yeah. Hey, you know, a little give exchange. Me Netflix. You give me Disney Plus.
I'm not endorsing doing this. I'm saying I've heard of people doing this.
It's a
rumor.
I think it's very smart, is what I think.
Yeah, it probably is. Quick question: if you have MLB.com, like a subscription to that, you can't stream their games.
I don't know if you can stream every game. Someone texted in and said they can't watch all Mariners games.
I know you can get.
So I don't know.
I know you can get like radio broadcasts, which doesn't really help. I'm just saying. All right, Sock's in here next. We'll ask him about this. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
You know, every once in a while when we have Mike Salk in here, we ask him a question about a given topic, and he surprises me. Like, I think when we asked you, Mike, or maybe it was off the air, when baseball wanted to toy with that idea of... for extra innings, like putting a runner at second base. I think you gave that the thumbs up, didn't you? You didn't?
No, I'm thumbs down.
You were thumbs down on that one?
Yeah.
Okay, well, where do you stand on this new proposal?
I'm thumbs down again.
Okay, now, hold on. There's a couple of issues here. one is expanding the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's one issue. Number two is the second best division winner being able to pick their opponent.
Yeah, that is weird, too. The idea of picking your own opponent is just asking to lose. Doesn't matter who you pick. You pick them, they're going to find a way to beat you because they're offended that you picked them. So I'm not really in favor of any of this, to be honest with you. And it's not just because I'm a traditionalist. I just don't think they're solving the right problems. So, you know, you want to go back to that runner on second base in extra innings. The problem with baseball is not extra innings. By the time you get to extra innings, who's turning it off and saying it's not exciting? The problem is the third and the fifth and the sixth. The problem is not the tenth. So you're solving a problem that doesn't exist. It's not that I'm traditional. You want to put a runner on second base in the fourth inning? I would have a conversation about it. But putting him on base in the 10th is like, no, I'm already super invested. If I'm here watching in the 10th inning, I don't need any help. Baseball is great once you're in the 10th inning. So I think they're just solving the wrong problem there. When it comes to this, I just think that baseball, you can't have a marathon of a season and still allow that many teams into the dance. That's the problem. You're again trying to solve the wrong thing. If baseball is going to be a marathon, and that is part of its charm, it is also part of its curse, but it's part of its charm. The answer is not to then let everybody in at the end of the marathon because you're devaluing the marathon. And I don't want baseball to become more like the NBA. I don't think that's a good thing for the sport. I didn't initially like the idea of our current playoff format when they went to this
two wild card teams,
and I thought at the time that it was a mistake. And I talked that day to Jason Stark. I was on the air. I was hosting on ESPN Radio nationally. And he, in like 5 minutes, convinced me I was wrong. And at the end of the conversation, I was like, yeah, I'm wrong. Jason's right. And in order to like the current system, you have to not call it a playoff game, the wild card game. You have to think of it as a play-in game. You have to think of the fact that the three division winners made the playoffs, and the next two teams get one game to try to battle their way in, not to be battled out. Does that make sense?
Completely.
Because if you look, you say, oh, well, I worked so hard, I made the playoffs, and then I'm out in one game. Nope, you didn't make the playoffs. You worked so hard to give yourself a shot at the playoffs, these other three teams made the
right,
playoffs.
Right, you're a second-place team. We're throwing you a bone.
We're throwing you a bone.
Yeah.
You didn't deserve this, but we're going to be nice. And out of the goodness of our hearts, we're going to give four teams, two in each league, an opportunity to try to make the playoffs, even though you didn't quite qualify for it. That is a win for baseball. It creates excitement. It creates an opportunity for lots of teams from the trade deadline on out. It makes September, I think, a whole lot more fun for more teams. But it's realistic in saying, no, the best teams over the course of a marathon are still the best teams and are still given the best opportunity to make them win the World Series. And I don't think they have it wrong. I think it's right. And I think they're trying to fix something that's not broken.
So let me ask you this, because of the marathon, there's been, Tom had a couple of rule proposals that I thought were interesting, and one that I agree with. So you love the idea of the marathon. What about taking out some of those games and making it an 80 to 100 game season? Would that change anything in your mind, or would you lose something?
I think you could take out 25 games and, you know, be in that 125 to 130 range. An 80 game season is not baseball. Part of baseball is playing a long time. Like that's part of the gig. That's part of what makes it special. That's the challenge that's embedded in it. And I think over the years, we have tried to standardize so many of these things, and we lose part of the character of a lot, not just baseball, but a bunch of games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you guys aren't huge hockey fans necessarily, but Tom may understand this. When they basically standardize the size of the rinks instead of allowing teams to have their own sizes, bigger corners and narrower corners, if the game wasn't as good afterwards. You had teams that built their team around the style and size of their rinks. The non-standardization made it better, right? When you watch golf or you watch NASCAR or any of these other sports, one of the things they all get right is that week to week it changes. I watch a lot of golf these days, and week to week it changes, right? And the challenges for each course, one time it's wind, and the next time it's small greens, and the next time it's thick rough, and it punishes different types of players. The sports don't all need to be the same. It's okay for baseball to be different from football, to be different from basketball, to be different from hockey and soccer and everything else.
But what if it's not? The reason to shorten the baseball season isn't to be more like basketball. It's to protect baseball from itself. Like, part of the problem is that these games that you're watching during the regular season don't mean anything. So forget that basketball even exists. If you trim 60 games out of there, that would add some urgency.
It would add a little, but I don't mind the fact that each game individually doesn't mean the world. Deciding the best team based on how they were over 160.
If you have a 100-game season, I think you get both of those things. I think you can relax and not have to watch every single game, and it adds more urgency.
You may be right. I wouldn't want to go fewer than 100. I would probably be in that 125 range. Okay, fine. Maybe we're splitting hairs. I do think you could shorten the season a little bit without it being a problem, but I don't want to change the very essence of what makes it baseball, which is surviving the marathon, which is, hey, you know what? I want to pitch this guy another inning or two here, but his arm's breaking down and I got to walk. That's part of the
But they
game.
Already do that.
I mean, I know, think about I like the that. Way th- and I don't want to see play- I don't want to see that go away.
You could have a 50-game season and still have that. I mean, with the way the baseball's going, with the way pitchers are used.
There is some validity to that. I think it is best when played over a longer period of time. And maybe 162 is a bit too many, but I don't know that you need to go much lower than 125.
As a baseball traditionalist, then, are you in the camp that any concerns about the longevity of baseball, especially among younger fans, is just overblown? Or do you think, yeah, maybe it's a problem, but I don't want to fix it?
I don't really want to fix it too much because I would rather have the sport die and not be around anymore, or not be popular anymore, than have it change and not be baseball.
Do you think baseball has a problem?
I don't think it's as big as people make it out to be. There's no doubt that it doesn't do well with the younger generation. But what I'm not sure we know is whether or not those same kids that don't like it when they're 20 start to like it when they're 40. I don't know whether it's that the generation is out and will never be in, or whether it just takes some maturing and getting used to in order to kind of maybe people find it later in life. I also think the numbers show
Like golf?
Yeah, like golf. Absolutely
really
like golf.
Is, though.
I also think that the numbers show that baseball is not a good national sport. It's not a good national conversation. The World Series, if your team isn't in it, is not nearly the exciting moment that the NBA championship or the NFL Super Bowl is. It's not close to that. But the local ratings year after year work. Local ticket sales year after year work. Baseball is still popular at a local level. It just doesn't work as well nationally. By the way, the NBA, I think, is the opposite of that. The NBA works great nationally, but nobody cares about their own individual team because 28 of them don't have a chance to win. So I think they're just after a somewhat different audience. Is baseball perfect? No. Does it have problems, Stacey? Absolutely. And there are some things they could tweak to change it. But I think the problems are overblown. And I think that because it's a good narrative to kind of get after baseball a little bit. And I just don't want to see the game become something different. The problems I have with the game are a lot of the after effects of the statistical revolution. And by the way, I'm not saying that stats are a bad thing. They're great for winning. And if you're not embracing it, you're not trying to win. But a lot of the side effects of the things they've learned through statistics have not been good for us, the viewer.
In what way?
Well, let's take a few examples. We know that that walks are great for winning, right? It's really good to walk. Mm-hmm. It's really boring to watch walks. It's really great to bring in five different pitchers in the seventh inning and leverage your best relievers. It's really boring to watch. It is a really good thing for winning to change your launch angle and swing up at the ball and all these things they've determined, but it means that we get a lot of strikeouts, a lot of home runs, and not much action in the middle. It's great to shift for winning, but it means you're taking away a ton of base hits, which are fun to watch. So all of these statistical things that are great and smart end up hurting the game from the inside out, and that's what I think they need to address.
Man, how could they do that, though?
I know. It's really hard, and that's why I'm much more in favor of saying, Tom, your second baseman has to stay on one side of second, your shortstop has to stay on the other side. I would be much more inclined to go with some of those types of changes that are just bringing us and allowing us to keep the game the way it should be instead of – and I'm not making fun or being mad at the stats people. They're right, they're smart, and they're doing it the right way. I don't blame them. But there's a negative side effect from a viewing perspective that no one seems to be ready to deal with yet.
Thanks for coming by, Mike.
See you guys.
Thanks, Saul.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. Should these changes be applied to any other sport, even the ones that are working? Tom, Jake, and Stacey, we'll talk about that next on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
We just had a great conversation with Mike Salk there, and I think he made a lot of sense about some of the needs that baseball has and some of the needs that it doesn't have. I was just thinking in the break, though, and I'm going to go like hardcore old man on you guys for a second.
Okay.
Go for it.
Go for it, Tom.
Back when I was growing up in the 80s. You know
the Miracle on Ice was taped
in the 80s.
That's right. Yeah, way back in the 80s,
What a time to be alive.
When I was watching baseball, and I guess part of this could be that I was just a little kid and I wouldn't have noticed anyway, but baseball didn't have any problems. We never, ever, like I'm talking about up until the age of like maybe 20, baseball didn't have any problems ever. We didn't talk about like the issues. Oh, well, is it too, the game's too long, too many games, the, you know, shifting. None of that stuff was ever, ever part of the conversation. Like, not only was it not part of the conversation, we didn't even think about it. We just watched the game or we didn't. It was that simple.
Yeah, and you want to know what's funny? I don't know why this popped up on my timeline on Facebook, but I checked it yesterday and it was someone had shared this post from the Cincinnati Reds, you know, sending out a tweet that on this day, Pete Rose broke the hitting record.
Right.
And the stadium was wild. Like, it was jam-packed. People were going nuts. I mean, it was obviously they were there for a big moment, but you could sense that baseball was so much bigger back in that time. And it's interesting because as Mike Salk laid out for us in the last segment, I do agree with a lot of sentiment of what he's talking about. And during that time, Tom, in the 80s, shifting and the statistical revolution that it just wasn't here, right? It hadn't happened yet. And so I think a lot of the things that makes baseball great, which is the strategy of, you know, playing in terms of offense, you know, hitting and bunting and, you know, trying to, you know, play that style of game, I think is so much more entertaining to watch than it is watching a bunch of guys strike out and hit a bunch of bombs. Like, I miss that part of the game a ton. And yeah. I think that it, within that 162 game that we talk about maybe, you know, shrinking down, I would be much more apt to watch it if I was watching more entertaining baseball throughout that given season. That, to me, you know, as Salk was talking, I was like, you know what? That actually really hits the sentiment of how I feel when I watch baseball now.
I just think part of it, I don't know that baseball has the stars that the NBA and NFL do now, and I don't think that used to be the case. And part of that is due to the massive growth, especially particularly of the NFL over the last 20, 30 years. But it feels like those stars permeate. Like, my mom isn't a Patriots fan. She doesn't watch a ton of football. She could tell you who Tom Brady is and a handful of other NFL stars. Like, my grandma could tell you who Tom Brady is.
Really?
And I don't know, probably.
That's impressive.
Let's call her up. Alita.
You know who Tom Brady is?
It's us. But I think that baseball, I was watching, I told you this a while ago, that I started watching the Ken Burns baseball documentary. And the episodes that I'm at right now are, were like a, the last one was almost exclusively about Joe DiMaggio. And this idea of people just like waking up, going to check to see if he broke the hitting, or you know what I mean?
Yeah.
To just the idea of just across the nation being, I guess, enthralled by a single storyline or a single player. And I just don't think they have that anymore. You think of some of the biggest players they have right now, Mike Trout, Aaron Judge, Jose Altuve. I mean, these are guys that are at the top of their profession, and I just don't know that they permeate the culture and non-sports viewers the same way that guys like LeBron James do.
Well, think about this for a second. Sports are still a show. If you watch an NBA game, you're watching a TV show. If you're watching a baseball game, you're watching a TV show. A hockey game, whatever. You can say all you want that the NFL is the best sport, baseball is the best sport, NBA, whatever. It doesn't matter what's the best sport. It matters what the best show is. And it seems like in the last maybe 20 years, since TV has fractured into like a million different just styles, like we're streaming now, there's Netflix, there's Prime, there's all this different stuff, all these different kinds of shows. Baseball just in a way hasn't survived that because the owners, they want to win. Like, winning doesn't make for a good show necessarily.
Especially not in today's baseball.
Right.
Right?
Like, it just so happens that in the NFL, the way it's set up with every team, you know, every team is lined up on paper to be 8-8. And from there, it's the owner's job or the GM's to try and win, right, to try and be 10-6 or 11-5 or whatever it is. But it still makes for a great show. The way baseball is set up, it doesn't really fit with that at all.
Well, in the highlights, like, I can only do so many highlights of a home run.
Yeah.
Like, I want a double play. Like, I want a really cool moment where, you know, someone makes some improbable catch and tosses it over to the second baseman. And I want something like that for a highlight. And I just feel like it's not that you don't see a ton of that, but I feel like home runs are only so awesome for so long you're like, all right.
It's a great point because you don't see those amazing plays anymore. You don't see them as often. They do occur, but it's few and far between from what actually used to be. I mean, you would see outfielders making great plays because they're not, you know, totally shifted over into the exact spot the hitter is going to hit in. Same with the infielders.
Right.
I mean, those are things, Stacey, that, again, the strategy, when you talk about these star players, and you talk about, you know, fielding now, especially at shortstop and second base and all that, I miss looking at a player and going, that is an amazing second baseman. That's an amazing shortstop, because really their skills that they have, they don't really get to showcase those on a, you know, night by night basis anymore.
You know what else we used to have way back in the '80s? AstroTurf. That sped the game.
You think that needs to come back?
Yes, I do.
I thought you were going to say Dunkaroos.
No, Dunkaroos were more '90s, if I remember correct.
And secondly, Dunkaroos are coming back.
Oh, they come.
They are.
They're coming back.
Dunkaroos are coming back.
Dunk.
I'm going to get some for the show. We're all going to eat them.
Have you ever gotten an AstroTurf burn?
No, have you?
No.
Yes, I have, and I don't wish that on anybody. Like, it might speed up the game, but I would feel really bad for the players to have to deal with that AstroTurf.
Look at Jake coming from a player perspective.
Oh,
me and Tom are like, but it's so much faster.
It is.
AstroTurf burns are the worst. Those cuts are brutal.
When I'm in the stands eating a hot dog, I want to see a good game.
Can you guys sing the Dunkaroos song?
No.
You can't?
Why don't you sing it during the break?
Dunkaroos, Dunkaroos, you don't just eat your Dunkaroos.